You're listening to CITR 101.9, broadcasting from UBC's Point Grey campus, located on the traditional, unceded, Coast Salish territory of the Hunkaminam-speaking Musqueam people.
Hey, UBC, here's an internet deal just for students. Get TELUS internet for just $30 per month for 12 months with no term contract plus a free gift. Find our TELUS reps on campus today from 8:30 to 4:30 p.m. at the L1 Nest Atrium to learn more. Conditions apply.
For all of you yoga enthusiasts out there, Big Sisters of BC Lower Mainland is hosting a 10-hour team relay consisting of 10 one-hour yoga sessions. The event will take place at Jonathan Rogers Park on Saturday, September the 10th from 9 a.m. to 7 p.m. There will also be vendors, salad bars, children's activities, music, and safe spaces for self-care. Register online for free at bigsisters.bc.ca. All levels of expertise are welcome to come and join us on this 10-hour grind.
Hello, hello. You are listening to CITR 101.9 FM, broadcasting live from unceded Musqueam territory at the University of British Columbia in Vancouver, BC. And this is our first show back in the school year. And like me, during most of my classes when I was in school, I am late. And I'm sorry, everything seems to be going just a little slow today. Anyway, I hope everyone is doing well out there, enjoying being back at school. I don't know if you can hear me outside. If you can, what's up? I hope your first classes have been good. I hope you've been going to live at lunch, because if you haven't, you've been missing out. And, well, let's see. Yeah, I guess that's all I have to say for the youngins. If I'm going to say anything else, it's just going to be, you know, give it up and enjoy yourself and, enjoy it while it lasts. And, someone else giving it up is Angel Olsen with her amazing new album, My Woman. And this is the song, Give It Up. Enjoy.
Part of
we're back. And that was our first little set of songs here to get you going, get you started on your day. There's booths everywhere, as per usual, on this Imagine Day. Or it's not Imagine Day, on this Thursday, first Thursday of school, probably first Thursday class for many students. I could see people studying already, or maybe they're looking at their phones. It's hard to tell. And that's just in general. All right, we're going to keep the music going. But first, you want to know what we listen to. We listen to the song Give It Up by Angel Olsen off her new album, My Woman, which came out on Friday. It is amazing. You should listen to it, please. Then we listen to Art Deco, which is a Vancouver band person. I think it's a person that has a band, with the song The Deal, which is off of Art Deco's upcoming album, Day Fevers, which releases tomorrow. All right, we're going to keep it going. We got the youth representing here. Since a lot of kids are starting school now, I thought, why not play them a song by some of their peers? This is people who are either not old enough to go to university yet, or maybe they're just old enough to start. This is Winona Forever with Shrek, little squiggly line, chic. Enjoy.
Yeah.
Hey kids, join CITR 101.9 FM. This is A Face for Radio, your favorite show on the FM dial, and we just listened to two songs. The first song we listened to was Winona Forever with Shrek Chic off of their album This Is Fine, period. And then we just finished listening to Supermoon with the song Stories We Tell Ourselves About Ourselves off of their album Playland. All right, now we're going to listen to a story that is told to others about the author's sisters. The story is by the American writer Domingo Martinez out of his book The Boy Kings of Texas, and this story was first played on This American Life, and I'm rebroadcasting it here. I hope you enjoy, and then we'll be back with some more tunes.
When they started junior high, my sisters Mary and Margie invented the memes as a way to cope with any feelings of inferiority they might have otherwise experienced. They were entering the sinister world of teenage girls, which, in the mid-1980s in Brownsville, Texas, was tinged with border town racism. Instead of being ashamed of who they were, my sisters decided to create a polite fiction and invited everyone to participate. First, they dyed their brown black hair blonde until it turned the color and brittleness of hay. Then, they began dressing in Sergio Valenti and Gloria Vanderbilt. And finally, to cap it off, they decided to call each other simply Mimi. A typical conversation between them went like this. Mimi, do you like my new Jordache jeans? Yes, Mimi, I do. Do I look rich in my new Nikes, Mimi? Mimi, you look like a tennis player, Mimi. I know, Mimi. Maybe I should make Mom buy me a racket. It was really that simple. The Mimis made a conscious decision that they would be rich and white, even if their family wasn't. In other words, Marge and Mare had a small break from reality that we all participated in to help them through junior high. We all helped in creating the Mimis. At the time, the rest of the family had not fully realized that her job, as relatively new Americans, and worse yet, Texans, was to be as white as possible. And we honestly didn't see their delusion as anything other than another bewildering tactic in our sister's quest for a higher level of superior fashion, just teenage girls doing what teenage girls do. There had been a time when her family had been rich by barrio standards because her grandpa, Dad's stepfather, fought in the Korean War and used his GI money to start a trucking business when he got back. He married Grandma, who was widowed from her first marriage at age 16, and gave both her and my dad citizenship. My siblings and I, we were all born in Brownsville as Americans, but really didn't understand what that meant. Not really, not in that area. Then Grandpa died in 1980, and our world began to crumble. The trucking business began to disintegrate around Dad, and he was started on a slow road towards desperation and religion. Meanwhile, the Mimis had made their decision to be two blue-blooded, trust-funded tennis buddies from Connecticut, accidentally living in Brownsville, Texas with us, a poor Mexican family they had somehow befriended while undergoing some Dickensian series of misfortunes. No one acted like it was peculiar, especially those in the family who didn't speak English or could not understand the Mimis when they showed up at family gatherings. Yo no puedo hablaro espanolo, one of the Mimis would say to an uncle or cousin, who more often than not would linger lasciviously around them, at first conflicted by the idea of being turned on by so young a relative, and then mentally calculating just how distantly related they were, and tabulating his odds at scoring with this new white chick who just happened to show up at this barrio party. But only after two or three beers. Mimi, how did you like my Spanish? Oh, Mimi, it's getting really good. Mimi, do you think they understood me? Oh, Mimi, who cares? Soon, the Mimis were buzzing at a fever pitch, intoxicating everyone who came near and caught a whiff of the Mimis' Anais perfume. We had all seen the commercials on network television while watching Dallas or Knots Landing, and it was a forbidden fragrance for rain-depressed English women with secret muscular boyfriends who drove Jaguars dangerously through unpaved one-lane Scottish roads. So the Mimis had to have it, and they found it at the local JCPenney and had Mom pay for it. Me and my brother Dan and our oldest sister Sylvia We just kind of stank from the heat and dealt with it. Even Mom developed her own fascination with the Mimis, like she couldn't believe her luck now that she was related to royalty. Feeding into their fantasy gave her one of her own, so she was always ready for an air-conditioned trip to the mall. She took the little clothes budget reserved for us boys, my brother and me, and added it into the Mimi's wardrobe, because to her, it was a sign of status for the family that the Mimis looked their best. None of the rest of us would question it, even though it felt wrong. I was often left with the Mimi's recently stylish hand-me-downs. No one else in my grade school was remotely label-conscious or capable of reading in English, really, so it passed unnoticed that most of my clothes were made for glamorous junior high school girls. Almost every child at my school came from recently immigrated families. Kids so poor they'd save half their free lunch to share with their younger siblings at home, their heads shaved to rid them of lice. My best friend Arthur, he noticed, though. He was part black and part Mexican, had just moved to Brownsville from some big city slum in Michigan, where his mother's boyfriend had been employed at a GM factory, and he read labels. "Hey, Dom," he said. "Yo, man, you're wearing a girl's shirt. Or is the spree making baggy boy shirts now, too?" So to change the subject, I slugged him high in the chest and ran away. He chased me down to punch me back and left me crying in my girl's blouse. If she had any guilt about giving the Mimis the lion's share of the clothing budget, I imagine the justification my mother probably used was that my older brother and I would just ruin our clothes, working with Dad under the greasy trucks. It made better sense for the Mimis to be in high fashion than for the feral boys to wreck new clothes. "Mimi, you look just like Jennifer Beals in Flashdance. You should join the dance team at school." "I know, Mimi, I think so too. Mimi, I think you should dye your hair back to its original color, ash." "I know, Mimi, I'm trying." During this time, my brother Dan's eyesight was so bad he couldn't read the blackboard in school and constantly ran into corners or short, skinny people. People thought he was Asian, he squinted so much. Every photo of him taken in junior high, he looks like he's trying to see into the photographer's eyes through the camera lens. This, of course, goes entirely unnoticed, and it is the younger Mimi, Mary, with a 20/20 vision, who gets vanity glasses with her name etched in gold script in the corner. Dan wouldn't get glasses until he was in the military, when he was 17. Eventually, Dad's failure at navigating the business and providing for his family intruded on the Mimi's fantasy. Dad made a decision that as soon as school ended, Mom would take the Mimis and Syl and drive them to California to participate in the seasonal grape harvest with Dad's cousins, people vaguely related to Grandma through marriage, I think. They would be treated like adults there, paid the same as everyone else. Mom, I remember, was horrified at the implications, at the shame of having to send her virginal and royal daughters out to the fields. Plus, Dad's extended family out in California were very different from us, wild and frightening and Californian. The Mimis, though, were undaunted, did not understand the complications. "Mimi, we're going to California? Oh my God, Mimi, we're going to be Valley Girls. Mimi, gag me with a spoon, Mimi. Mimi, your roots are showing." We packed up Mom, the Mimis, and Sylvia in the beige 1980 Pontiac Bonneville, already an antique on its second engine and failing transmission, and they drove out of Brownsville. A year later, I took this ride as well, and also ended up picking grapes for the summer, mostly out of envy. That we were migrant workers for that period didn't occur to me, nor to anyone else. That label would never stick, could never stick. We couldn't descend to that level. We just had to do it to help out Dad, that was all. Desperate circumstances calling for desperate measures and all that. But it was too much for the Mimis, the reality of this first trip. Sadly, I think it was childhood's end for the Mimis. The vineyards had somehow inverted their secret garden, and the low door in the wall had closed shut behind them. When they first reached California, the Mimis did indeed become Valley Girls, the hippest, cutest, best-dressed migrant workers of that year, and very likely for many years to come. The older Mimi, Marge, continued to dress like Jennifer Beals in Flashdance out in the fields, where the sun sizzled any inch of exposed skin. She wore a spaghetti-strapped, red and white striped esprit top, white cotton shorts, and a matching headband with her red and white leather Nike tennis shoes, and took pictures of the vineyards and the workers with her Canon AE-1. Her headband kept a white strip of skin on her forehead from tanning, and as a result, she was forced to wear headbands for a few months afterwards, way after headbands were out of fashion. Eventually, though, even she started dressing like the rest of the migrant workers, wearing long-sleeved collared shirts buttoned all the way to the neck, thick, unstylish denim and work boots, with a bandana covering her nose and mouth, or else she would have died of heatstroke. There were no photos taken of that. Mary, the younger Mimi, did not fare any better. Her vanity glasses with the fake lenses were scratched well beyond recovery. Her roots grew out, and her hair turned a lighter brown as a result of the heat and the pesticides of the grape fields of Southern California. The hard work went on all summer, and eventually it became bitter enough to breach even the walls of the Mimi's perfectly constructed fantasy. And so sadly, eventually even they were humiliated, and the illusion of wealth that had kept the family's idea of itself buoyant was deflated. When they returned to Brownsville, as happy as we were to see them, no one ever mentioned the Mimis again. They were gone, and it was Marge and Mary that returned in their place, Mary rubbing her nose with the palm of her hand from allergies and snapping at anyone who tried to talk to her, and Marge, who never went back to California and took a job at the bank the following summer instead. I was sorry to see the Mimis go. We all were. When they were at their peak, the Mimis had been capable of creating a real sort of magic around them, enchanting both people and places so that you could be looking at the same dreary landscape as them, the same terrible and hopeless event. And while you might be miserable and bitter, they would be beaming, enthralled, and enthusiastically hopeful. And then, if you got near them, or were blessed enough to maybe talk to them, you would walk away feeling the same way as they felt, too. They were a gift to everyone who was lucky enough to get caught in their Anais, the Mimis. They made all of us Americans.
El Paso, 694, at the Stonewall, make a left. And I will see you soon, my friend, with these old directions. Still direct, oh yeah, get these old directions still direct. Is the problem that we can't see, or is it that the problem is beautiful to me? Birds of Virginia flying within ya, like background singers, they all come in threes. Like background singers, they all come in threes. Won't soul music change now that our souls have turned strange? Once a day, twice a day, yeah. When on and off collide, set our souls aside and walk away. We've been raised on replicas, fake and winding roads, and day after day up on this beautiful stage, we've been playing tambourine for minimum wage, but we are real. Change souls have turned strange.
Thank you. Party and Noir is the annual celebration of underground accordion culture, bringing together artists from around the globe for 4 days of Squeezebox-themed concerts, dance parties, and community events and cabaret. A longtime East Vancouver favorite this year is Noir Potion No. 9, showcasing the best in alt accordion, including cabaret, circus, folk roots, indie, punk, and klezmer. This year's festival highlights the accordion's deep cultural roots and features acts from Texas, Nunavut, Colombia, China, France, alongside local favorites like Jeff Burner, Jack Garten and the Demon Squadron, and many more. Blending the cutting edge with the fiercely danceable, Noir Potion No. 9 is a 4-day dose of love tonic guaranteed to cure accordion haters.
All right. The show is A Face for Radio. I'm your host, Eric Coates. Accordions are pretty cool. All right, we listened first to a short story by Domingo Martinez from his memoir, The Boy Kings of Texas, called The Mimis, I believe, off of his and rebroadcasting when he read it for This American Life. I hope you enjoyed that. I think it's a very sweet story. Then we listen to the song We Are Real by the Silver Jews off of their classic, I think, 98 album, American Water, followed by Ashley Shadow with the song Tonight off of her new album, which is self-titled. And then finally, we finished that little set with the song On Your Own Love Again by the off the album of the same name by Jessica Pratt, who is an L.A. singer-songwriter type. And well, not type, she is. And she's great. So hope you enjoyed. We don't have too much time left. We got about 8 minutes before Rock from Russia descends upon this Studio A here and brings you blasts of punk rock. So I've got two more songs, and then we're signing out. I hope you had a good show. I hope you enjoyed the show. If you're at school, hope you're digging your first day of class, or second or third or however many days you've been at it so far. Hopefully you haven't given up on, you know, doing your readings and dressing like you aren't in your bedroom. All right, we got two songs left. We're going to first listen to the song Torig by The Fall off of their album Imperial Wax Solvent, which is from, I'm just going to double check here, I think it's the mid-2000s, maybe 2008. Yes, that's right. It's their album from 2008. So we're going to listen to Torig by The Fall, followed by the band Milk Lines, which is a Toronto band, and we're going to listen to the song Another Breed off of their album Ceramics to close out the show. I hope you enjoyed. We'll be back next week with some more tunes. Have a great Thursday, everybody. Over and out. Yeah. I'm not sure.
Tune into Post Rock Friday from 10 to 11 with your host John P for the best in post rock, drone, ambient, experimental, and noise.
Bye.